You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome in to another episode of Hockey Royalty Live, the official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. We got a doozy here for you guys today, so strap on in. We're going to be talking around the Pacific. We're going to be talking Christmas gifts from the LA Kings, New Year's resolutions, some line changes, the World Juniors, and, of course, the seat at the round table. In case anybody had their head under a rock today, the Clark call-up. So if you guys are excited in the chat for the Clark call-up, can I get a hell yeah, and let's go. Oh, yeah. Carter coming in with the hell yeah. We got Kingsville with the hell yeah. We got some CJ got in the first comment of the day at a 1:11 p.m. Happy New Year, everybody. Let's hope the Kings get their mojo back. Yes, we are. Anthony coming in here. Here we go, boys. Let's bring the energy. So the Kings bring the energy tomorrow night. Hey, I got you set, man. I got plenty in this Energizer Bunny here going on. Let's go, boys, from Lieb. Carter scores Happy New Year. Dan coming in. Happy New Year, Kings fans. Go Kings. And Kubiak SB. Hell yeah. Appears they need something to happen. Well, we're going to be getting into that today. First, before we get into all the accoutrement, got to talk to the co-host here. Russ, Joe, how are you guys doing?
Doing pretty good. Doing pretty good. Good to see you boys. It's been a couple weeks, right?
Yeah, last week off. Yeah.
It has been. I don't know if you spent as much as the Dodgers did on their Christmas gifts, but how was your guys' holiday?
Yeah, it was good. I spent the White Christmas here. With some family out here, just kind of kept it low key. But most of my immediate family's out in Arizona, so I went out there for the New Year's, got to see them, got to ring in the New Year with the fam. So it was fun time. How about you, Joe?
It was good. No, it was good. The kids, awesome. The only thing I'll say is this: like you, and this probably doesn't resonate with you guys. There's no snow out here. It has not felt like Christmas at all.
Yeah, that doesn't resonate with me at all.
It just isn't the same.
You're not complaining, though. You know, last year it was what? Like you guys were frozen solid through like homes and it's blizzards and stuff?
It's supposed to be. It's winter in Western New York. It's supposed to be cold. It's supposed to be snow. Like there's been nothing. And I'm being honest, I'm a little disappointed. I'm sure I'll regret saying that because we're going to get hit with something soon. But
probably.
You know, there's nothing on the ground.
Midway plowing your driveway, you're gonna be like, I should have tempted fate.
Regret that.
Yeah, mine was pretty good. Just hung out with the brothers, you know, watched some football. Went out to Dallas to see my good friend. You know, play some board games with the kids. You know, playing Monopoly with a 4-year old is not always the easiest, but it was fun nonetheless. Little White Russians and had a good day. So you know, really liked it. It was kind of a simple holiday, nothing too crazy. And you know, went from there. So let's get into it, boys. Let's get into it. We're going to start here with the big news. We're going to start with the big news. Clark Train is loading up, fueling up, ready to go. He's shipping out to LA here. I missed it here. Carter scores. Appreciate the $10, buddy. Thanks, Carter. Thank you for coming in here. If you want to throw a question in there, let me know and I'll throw it up there on the board. Yeah, Clark Train's ready to go. And I am excited beyond belief. A couple of people on Twitter were saying that Raynan's going to be obnoxious and I'm here for it. And you are 100% correct. So I think this kid has been the best player in the AHL for half season. And the people that want him to prove that he could do it, well, there's your proof. And so my thought has been, always been, and always will be, play your best players that you have. He's proven that he's one of the best defensemen in the roster for the LA Kings, and he's getting a call up. Obviously paired today with Anderson on, but that was a vet day off for Drew Jaddy, accurately reported by your Russell Morgan. Great article today, Russ. If you guys haven't checked that out yet, hockeyroyalty.com for that article. So it's only fitting I should throw it to you. You were there talking with Tom McClellan, talking with Brent Clark. What was the feeling? What was the buzz around the rink? How do you feel like he is different this year than last year to be ready for this moment?
Yeah, it's definitely a good way to hype up the fans after the last few games is to bring that that player Brent Clark up to the Kings. So I know everybody was so down after last night's game against the Maple Leafs. Such a frustrating way in terms of how that game was just entirely played out. Just the Kings couldn't generate really any offense. So what do? You call up arguably your most creative player in the AHL and Brent Clark, and that'll turn a lot of heads. So a lot of those frowns upside down, definitely. So it's good to see Clark. I mean, I think it's probably seems like the right move at this point, right? I mean, with how the Kings have been playing, he's already got like almost half a season in the AHL. It just kind of seemed right. I'd been on this train to be like, okay, keep him in the AHL as long as you can, and let's see where it gets to the point where maybe you have to call him up. And this feels like the right time of the season to do it. So thought it was a good move for the organization. He seems ready for it. I mean, you're talking about a confident player like Brent Clark. He's never going to mince words in terms of his abilities and his confidence. So talking with him, he seems like he's ready to go. Whether it be tomorrow night, which I don't see him plugging in right away. I think we'll probably have to wait to see him in the lineup, maybe on the road trip. I think the way that they lined up today maybe gives a little bit of, gives you a little bit more patience to see when they'll plug him in. So with Doughty out, you just kind of have him practicing with Mikey Anderson just for the day. Spence was still with Englund. Gavrikov was still with Roy. So, but there's still some possibility that we see maybe a Clark-Spence pairing, maybe a Clark Roy pairing. I don't know. I think Tom McClellan kind of left that door open a little bit. So yeah, a lot of excitement around the practice today.
Yeah, I mean, he's not, when you look at it, he's not just like one of the better rookies in the American Hockey League. He is in the top three, is the third most points in the AHL, and he's a rookie defenseman. So what he's doing is really impressive. So I think timing, you know, it kind of works out, I guess, that the Kings have been struggling lately, but he's basically just beaten down the door and said, my time is now, and he's earned the call-up. Where he fits, Russ, is kind of what you're talking about and where he slots in. And I think we're probably going to just see somewhat of a bit of a rotation between that bottom pair, right, whether there might be a game where Englund's out and whether it's Spence and Clark on the same pair, or they move Roy and Gavrikov around a little bit. I suspect Spence at some point will come out and Clark will go in. So I just think we'll start to see a little bit of a rotation between those three, which, okay, it is what it is. I just hope he gets a pretty good look here. And Randon, I mean, you're the first thought that I know I had, and I'm sure a lot of people had on Twitter. I'm just going to turn this to you and say, go ahead. Like, well, you have to be absolutely fired up right now. And let me word it this way, because I know you were disappointed when he was sent down to start the season. Now, after you look back and see what he did in Ontario, do you think that that was the right move and was worth it for them to do that?
I think it just proved – he just kept continually proving, yeah. Right? I mean, every single opportunity he's been given, maybe you could say outside the nine games, but making the roster out of camp is an achievement on its own. You know, and he said itself, like he in the interviews that he was talking about, he said that, you know, really all of our film sessions have been me playing defense. So I've taken my defensive game to a next level. I understand that I can't do all the things I love to do with the puck if we don't have the puck. So, and it's just, and I like the approach that the Rain have had with them, saying that, hey, we know you're extremely gifted when you have the puck. We're not even going to talk to you about that. We're going to continue punching and harping on the defensive part of your game. And we're just going to be mitts off when it comes to the offensive mind and skill set. Will Todd McClellan have that kind of freedom for a young kid like that? I don't know. I mean, he's been giving it to Fiala, but then he also kind of came down on Fiala for not doing certain things. But I think it's the type of player that the Kings need, and here's why. Like, one, they need offense. That's been apparent lately. The power play has been anemic this season, and it hasn't really been anything against Jordan Spence. I think he is a great puck mover. I think he puts a lot of pucks on net that give the second power play opportunity to score for a majority part of the season. The second power play was the best power play. So just because he's not putting points on the board, this is not a statement. For me, this isn't a statement for Jordan Spence. Like, them calling up Brent Clark isn't a statement against Jordan Spence. But I think the moxie of this kind of player, like, the Kings were playing loose and when they were winning and doing all their dances in the locker room. But sometimes you need a guy that can do that, has a little bit of an edge. I mean, he's not going to drop the gloves with anybody, but he's going to have that cocky attitude. He's going to be the guy that's going to take the top off a defense, as they say in football. But, yeah, you might get an odd rush here and there. But for the most part, the Kings have given up the least amount of goals in the Pacific. They have other defensive players on the team. They've been sound in the 1-3-1. So, like, to take a shot on a guy that could really generate that much offense, especially on the power play, I think is a no-brainer. And, like, he's ready. It's not like he got this call-up because of injury and he's playing an okay season in the AHL. Like, I mean, you're talking about a point-per-game player. He's got 7 goals, 25 assists. Like I said, well over a point per game, 95 shots. I mean, TJ Tynan has 35 shots. The one-time wizard, Fagimo's got 65, and he's got 95 shots. Like, he's peppering the offensive or net with that. And I think it's just a player that he cannot be denied on this team. He's been my favorite prospect. He might be a future Norris Trophy winner, and he needs to be on the roster. And this might end up being the best move for you to tie it back into what Joe said. Like, giving him time to acclimate to more of the pro game, bigger players, all this kind of stuff, learning how to watch film and break things down on a real level, having, you know, Stoll and the strength and conditioning coaches there every single day to where he can kind of grow into a more of a man's body, and then pull him up for the second half of the season, or, you know, the second or the last quarter or whatever that they were planning to do, and have him maybe be a lightning rod in the playoffs, might be the best move that they could have made. I mean, in hindsight. So, like, that's kind of where my thought process is. I'm just stoked for the kid. And I don't think that they should wait. I think he should be in the lineup tomorrow. I don't think that he should have to rotate. Because, like I said, it's not an offense to Jordan Spence, but Jordan Spence wasn't drafted in the top 10. Jordan Spence wasn't drafted to be the heir apparent to Jowdy. Jordan Spence wasn't those things. And he's proven himself that he is an NHL defenseman and a damn good one. But if you make this move, you're not making this move so this guy can sit up in the press box and eat popcorn.
I would hate it if it's going to come at the expense of Jordan Spence, because I think that's just crazy to me. I mean, I guess I get it from them just trying to slot in like for like and keep Englund, but the idea that they have to keep this certain setup that they have just for the sake of a structure, man, I don't know. Like, I think there's ways to do that. Even if you don't want to pair Clark and Spence together, I think there's ways to do it that they should both be in the lineup. I think that's your best lineup, is both of them in. I know that's wishful thinking on my part in terms of like a night in, night out thing, but that's certainly where I am at. I know there's a lot of people talking about how, well, this is not a knock on Spence. Like, Spence shouldn't even be a conversation. He shouldn't be coming out of lineup at all. It should be Clark. Let's give Clark a run of games in the lineup. Englund comes out and we see how it goes. But I, you know, there's people that still buy into, you know, he fought in Toronto yesterday, so I guess he gets points for that somehow. So sure. Fine. I get it. If that's what they want to do, I've made my peace with it. I don't, it's not how I do things. There's it's definitely, I think, better ways to utilize that lineup spot with somebody that can do a little bit more with the puck and make some plays for a team. Like in a game like last night, I honestly don't know what, you know, Englund brings to the table there. He can't keep pace with that. There's no plays he can make with the puck. So that's a game where you'd like to see, you know, somebody like a Clark in the lineup, even if it's not paired with Spence in that top six, just to give you another option to do something else with, because, you know, that's something that has been a issue with me for a while now, is the lack of offense coming from the blue line. And for all the I've seen some knock about Spence, he's got second most points among all the defensemen, and he's playing third pair minutes. So yeah, he's getting PP2 time, but you got a guy that's getting third pair minutes, and he's second on the team in points on the back end. And so it's the time is now for Clark, and I just hope that we see both in the lineup more often.
I mean, what have you always talked about, Joe? And we've talked about this on here, is play your best players. And sure, you might have to put them in position they might not be normally accustomed to. But, I mean, when you have a player who's offensively gifted like Brandt Clark, or can skate as well as Jordan Spence, I think those are type of players that you could probably shuffle around. And I'm talking about maybe possibly playing one of them on the left side.
Mm-hmm.
For me personally, I think the way that when I asked McClellan today, it's like a total contrast from what I asked him at the beginning of the year, because I wanted to see. And the answer when I asked him about whether he could see two righties play on the same pair, this was his answer at the beginning of the year. If we have to do that this year, we'll certainly do it. But we feel like we have a little more balance with lefties and righties. Total change from what he said today when he mentioned that it has to at some point be time where you see righty play with righty. Like, so for me, the way I took that, like, that's Brandt Clark playing with Jordan Spence. That's the way I took that. There's no way I don't see them breaking up Gavrikov and Roy, and I don't see them breaking up Anderson and Doughty.
True.
So, and with we've had this conversation too about the system that the Kings play, and it kind of limits or kind of shelters the left side of the the left defenseman a little bit. When you play that neutral zone, they don't really have to go and do that many puck retrievals, which has been kind of a knock, I guess, on Brandt Clark, his turn and go back and get those retrievals. So if you can do that with him on the left side, and also with his offensive capabilities on the left side, I think it's a no-brainer to play him and Spence together. And like we talked about, like, play your best players. Like Andreas Englund, I think Andreas Englund, we love Andreas Englund. He's been lights out in terms of what we expected him to be this year. But, I mean, just look back at the Vegas Golden Knights game. He got beat by Michael Amadio in the puck and a drive to the net, like, just easily. And that's something that McClellan has talked about on edge. Like, he couldn't get that goal out of his head. Like, I remember talking about it after practice the next two games after that. So, I mean, if you really want to play your best players, just give me Brandt Clark on the left side with Jordan Spence. It sounds like a really dangerous type of style, or really dangerous pairing in terms of giving up chances. But, man, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch those two play. And I think you're going to get a lot of offense out of it as well.
Two things on that, because I'm glad you mentioned Englund, and I want to, like, I know I'm come across harsh of what I said before, but I think why are we accepting of the bare minimum of, like, yeah, he's, you know what, he has exceeded my expectations. He's done a nice job for what his role is. Why are we okay with a no ceiling role? Why are we okay with a guy just because he's big, he hits, he's great presence? I want more.
Yeah. It's as simple as he drops the gloves. That's all it is. He drops the gloves.
I want more. I'm sorry, but I just want more from my defenseman. And
it's the mindset that people can't get out of, this, like, traditional NHL, like where you have a lot of that still. People like still really looking at, oh, you got to have that fighter, you got to have that enforcer in the lineup, and that's so, like, 5-10 years ago at this
point. So he can drop the gloves when it's 2-0 late in the game against
Trump. Yeah, like, you drop with Simone Benoit, like, it didn't impact the game. You didn't take out a good player. I mean, like, I don't want this to turn into a knock on Englund, though. Like, I get it. When you have a player like we've talked about with Brandt Clark just sitting there on the wings, where you can slide him in and hopefully unlock a little bit more of this offense that we've been missing, I think you have to figure out a way to get him and Spence together.
I still think there's room in today's game for an Andres England. I think there's still room in today's game for a bruiser, an agitator, a fighter in today's game, because just like you don't really realize it until you need it. I mean, until there's some games where it is spiky, it is getting it mucked up down there. You are happy with it. Do I believe that Andres England is an 82 game player where he should be playing every single night? No, I don't. And I think that you looked at it like everything was going great. He was playing well in the system. He wasn't an eyesore. He was doing things here. He was fighting at the right times. So when you're seeing all these positives, you're like, okay, well, I'm good with the way he's playing. And we all said it on this pod that we are glad with where the defense was at. When that stops
within reason.
No, I mean you said it too, Joe. I mean, obviously you said you would have wished this guy can do this and this and that, but you were saying, hey, they were winning games. And so what are we doing there? And then when teams start to lose games and you start to nitpick, you start to look at different things here and different things there. And it was pretty much the three teams that were the glaring things, the speed from all three of those teams, you know, and all three of those teams are vying for the Stanley Cup. So when you tear yourself up with a team that you possibly could be playing in the playoffs, it kind of be like, okay, well, maybe that's not what we need. Maybe we need more of this over here to compete with those guys. And there's a role for an Andres England, but maybe he's not an 82 game role.
Fair. And, you know, and I want to touch on the second part I was going to say that Russ had talked about with the pairing, right, of Clark and Spence being risky. You know, I go back to last year, and I know Durzi caught a lot of heat, but if you look at Sean Durzi's numbers when he was playing on the left side with Matt Roy, now it may not have been the ideal situation because of the big target that was out there that would have significantly improved the lineup, which is what we were talking about at the time. But if you looked at Durzi's numbers, Durzi was fine with that pair, wasn't an issue. And Durzi himself, if you went to Corey Schneider's all three zones tracking numbers, he was a positive in terms of zone defending zone eggs or defending zone entries, excuse me, from opponents, just because he was smart and when he could step. And I think Clark is naturally aggressive to the point where, Russ, I think you talked about a couple of years ago, at times he was maybe even overly aggressive in the neutral zone. But as that left defenseman, he's going to have to be. We see Gavrikov be very aggressive, and not aggressive in a physical sense, aggressive with your stick, because that's how you defend these days, with your legs and with your stick and with your brain. And I think Clark is more than capable of doing that. He can defend by being aggressive going up and attacking the play and meeting that play in the neutral zone rather than having the play come at him and be turned around. I think that suits him. So, I am not concerned about it. I'm willing to give it a shot. I get it, though. The Kings are looking to, you know, try to catch teams and win a division. So do they have time for a lot of experimentation? You know, it's almost like the Velarde thing a couple of years ago. And could you have called them up and played them top six when they were vying? I get it. But, man, we're accepting of the bare minimum of just, well, you know, he's safe. He's this. He's safe. He's up and out. He dumps pucks in. Hey, he doesn't hurt us. Okay, how much is he helping? Because that's how I look at that. That's fine. I want more than that. You know, I want more than, well, he isn't hurting us and he's doing his job. He's playing his role. That's fine, and I agree with all of that. Why does that mean there can't be something better? That's where I come out on it. So we'll see, and hopefully Clark gets a good run.
Yeah, I just want to bring up this tweet that Scott Wheeler had of The Athletic. He said, Brant Clark was having arguably the best U21 season in the history of the AHL for a defenseman. He said, I'm not kidding. 32 points in 30 games for a 20-year-old defenseman in that league is new territory for the modern AHL. Third in league scoring. First among defensemen. I mean, what more could you want and need, really, at this point, if you're Todd McClellan? I wonder who eventually made that call, if it was him going to Rob Blake saying, okay, we have to get Brant Clark here, or if it's Rob Blake saying, all right, let's give him a chance.
Yeah,
I think this is the perfect time. I mean, you have that 6-game road trip, like McClellan mentioned. He's going to be traveling with the team on the roadie. So I don't know.
Ever been a defenseman that you guys could think of that takes over games like the way Brant Clark is doing in the AHL right now? Just could put up a 3-point, 4-point night and carry the team on his back?
McCarr in the NHL.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, not on the Kings, really, in that I can remember. I mean, Jordan Spence was putting up really good numbers in the AHL. I don't want to disregard his rookie season in the AHL, which was really good, but this is unheard of territory for the Kings. And really, as a defenseman in the AHL, like Scott Wheeler said, like I've just brought it up. So, I mean, man, like I'm telling you, like, they were working on faceoffs and a little bit of breakouts too today at practice. And to see Brant Clark, some of the stuff he was doing, it was just like, this guy just he doesn't care. He's stepping into this NHL practice and it's like he's been there for years. I mean, there was one play I saw him make where he had Phil Deneau just kind of coming at him on a forecheck. And instead of maybe rimming it around the boards behind the net, he made a nice, a sick little dangle to his backhand and then kind of crept up ice and then just the silky saucer pass. And I just looked out, I don't know who I was sitting next to, and I was like, man, that's a cheeky fucker right there. That's like some cheeky stuff right there that you just don't see.
That is what I'm talking about, where sure, a defenseman in England, or even, you know what, I'll include maybe Mo Vararia in this too, because I know a lot of people want to see him up. You know, they may take that puck that you just said in that exact play, and they'll take it, and they'll wrap it, and wingers hate it, but he'll wrap it. Maybe they can chip it off, get it to the neutral zone. Puck's out of the zone. Did my job. Mm-hmm. Where's the upside there? Because we just gave up possession. More often than not, on a wrap, you're going to give up some sort of possession. You make a play like Clark makes. Now you're attacking. You control the zone entry, and you go into the zone. That is what I'm talking about. Is there more risk to it? Okay, but you're not going to win in this league by just playing it safe and wrapping stuff around a wall and going off the glass and out. I think you need to allow some of that. And I think the Kings are at their best these days. Like, this isn't the Kings of a decade ago. You look at the Kings today. Yeah. I think Spence, what he does, look at Kevin Fiala, and I know he has his moments, but I think the Kings are at their best when they're playing loose like that. They're playing with a little bit more freedom to them, to their, you know, and McClellan doesn't good enough job of reining it in when he needs to. I'd rather rein it in though, because you can't pull something out of something that's not there. But it's there with Clark. Let him be creative. Let these guys be creative, make plays, get up and out of zones and control exits and control entries, because that's the name of the game.
There's one thing I remember, like going back to this slide kind of feels like it all started with the game on the island against the Islanders. This is where it feels like this recent stretch has started. So I remember listening to that telecast, and Jim Fox mentioned how he hadn't noticed the team be as aggressive on the forecheck to the Kings as the Islanders were. And it kind of feels like I've just seen that more and more with every team that the Kings have played. I don't really have any numbers to back it up, but just from my sense of watching the game, and you can kind of just tell, like, the Kings breakouts just really haven't been there at all these last few games. And I wonder if it's just that aggressive forecheck that is something that teams have really turned on to when you're playing against the Kings. So when you have a player as creative as Brant Clark, as opposed to a player like Andreas Englund on the left side, who, just like you mentioned, Joe, will just get the puck out and then just get his job done. But when you have that creativity in terms of Brant Clark, I think you can unlock a little bit more of those rush chances that I feel like have been missing from the team.
There's a question that came up in the chat from the Big Lebowski. How is this kid an answer to the Kings' offensive issues? Setting aside the fact that he's such an incredible offensive talent. But what I want to talk about is kind of what we just were, Russ. The offense is going to start by controlling everything from the back end. If you can't get out clean, you're not going to create any offense. If all you're doing is rimming it off the glass and out, and there's no plan, there's no anything to what you're doing, you're not going to create any offense. If you have people that can make a first pass or at least make a better outlet and control your exit, now you give yourself a chance to the neutral zone to get the puck and then also control the entry on the way in. Because listen, let's face it, and I don't blame him for this. You know, Andreas Englund isn't somebody that you want lugging the puck and kind of carrying it through the neutral zone. So he's not somebody that controls entries. I have him at a 26% controlled entry rate because he dumps the puck. That's fine. He's doing his job. He's doing exactly what he needs to do. Jordan Spence is just a tick under 50% from a third pair defenseman. He's not more often because he's just under 50%, but he's trying to more willing to carry the puck into the zone as much as any defenseman. Only Mikey Anderson is better than Jordan Spence in terms of entry. So again, looking at guys that can control getting out of your zone and control getting into your zone, that helps your offense, even if it isn't in your own individual point tally, doing that, doing those things to get out of your own zone and into the offensive zone cleanly leads to more offensive opportunities and ideally, you know, in theory, more offensive production.
Yeah, I just want to read that, Brent. Sorry, I just want to read that, Brent Clark, because it ties into what Joe just said. I just want to read his quote from earlier today. I think it's perfect. Is he said, "If I want to do what I want to do offensively, then we have to have the puck, and it all starts with me being responsible in my own day. And I think I've done a really good job at that." So, I mean, that's exactly what Joe's saying. It's just if you can have those clean breakouts and have the puck in his own end, start the offense from there. That's where the offense starts. So I think that's the one thing that a lot of the organization probably really focused on with Clark, because he doesn't need the talent. He doesn't need the work on offensively or his IQ, because it's there. So, I mean, when he's in the offensive zone and the puck gets there, I think he can work magic. So don't worry about that. But if he can work on those breakouts, turn him into that all-around defenseman, man, I mean, it really unlocks something there.
I think where this might be the biggest question mark is the power play now. Obviously, there was only two guys, two defensemen that were legit power play options, and now there's three. So does he take over for Spence there, even though Spence has done a good job? Does he take over for Drew Doughty? Does he add to a power play to where you see two, because they're all right shots? Does you see two defensemen on a power play, one playing at the half wall for a one-time opportunities, like a Drew Doughty who's improved his shot, keep Brant Clark at the point? Like, where does this go? Obviously, you didn't say that they practice power play today, so maybe this might be an install over time. But obviously, you're not going to bring up your best offensive weapon and not play him on the power play. So where do you guys think this kind of affects how they might look at it? Do you think this will be an install over a long period of time, or do you see him on power play too as early as tomorrow night?
I mean, I think if he does end up coming in tomorrow, I mean, it'll probably be for Jordan Spence, just because it's just an easier switch as opposed to not giving him any practice time at all playing on the left side. So, or really anybody on the left side that's playing on the right side. So, yeah, I would just expect him to just slot right in in Jordan Spence's position on the second power play unit. But, I mean, if you have both of them in the lineup, I think you have to have both of them on the second power play unit. I think I would even consider putting Brant Clark on the first power play unit at that point because of how bad the power play has been. And like we've talked about, like, this is the most creative player probably on the team besides Kevin Fiala in terms of offensive capability. So for me, I think if you can have Clark and Spence on the second power play unit if Arthur Kaliev just going to continue being the doghouse, I really don't want to see Trevor Lewis get any more power play time. So, I mean, it just seems like such an easy answer for me to have Clark and Spence on the second power play unit. You can have Deneau, Moore, and I believe Dubois is on there as well. So, yes. And then you keep the first power play unit the way it is. So, I think that unlocks and maybe even makes the second power play unit better than the first, at least until Victor Arvidsson eventually comes back.
Yep, I think there's a case to be made that you could see a change in power play one with the defenseman. I don't think it's realistically going to happen. You know, not to say that Drew Doughty is the problem by any means. It's just I think Clark and or Spence would bring a different element that I don't think would hurt it. But again, I don't know how realistic that is. So. I'm with Russ. I think if they're on the in the lineup together, I play them both. I think I would probably keep keep Spence at the top just because he loves to wire, or maybe even move Spence to the left circle because he could be a one-time option on the left circle and let Clark roam up top. Actually, is probably how I would consider it off the top of my head. I don't know. That's what I would do. But I would think that if they're in the lineup together, they should both be out there in the power play. Obviously, if Spence sits, it's an easy swap that Clark plays the top for PP2.
Yeah. So let's get into here. Before we do that, we have a comment in here. Please hit that like button or take that like button to Pound Town as the new Kings thing there. Obviously, out the ice today, they were practicing shooting. And where the goal box is now Pound Town. So welcome to Pound Town for all the people here on the power play. Please hit that like button. So the next thing comes in here is line changes. Obviously, there was big hype with Brant Clark coming in here, but we also saw some line changes at practice. Russ, why don't you go over some of the stuff that you saw with them kind of switching some things up and maybe what you liked about kind of maybe the what you saw from practice today?
Yeah, that all started from pretty much the second period. in last night's game. It was kind of expected with how the offense has been struggling of late. So, I mean, you have a non-conference opponent. It seemed like the best time to do it. I would have liked to see them do it earlier because I kind of could kind of see these struggles start to happen and creep into the game in some of the lines a little bit. So what they pretty much did is they separated a lot of the duos that Todd McClellan had kind of been sticking with the last season and a half. So what was it? Kopitar is now with Trevor Moore and Quentin Byfield on the first line. You have Dubois playing with Kempe and Laferriere and Deneau playing with Fiala. And it was Grundstroming. And Cali was kind of mixing in there a little bit too. So you had both of them. But the fourth line was pretty much stuck the same. So, I mean, for us, really, who had been kind of looking for a little bit more offensive talent playing alongside Dubois, I think this helps him. And it also, I believe, gives Trevor Moore a little bit more of an opportunity to play big minutes with Andre Kopitar. So I'm excited. I think it's just more or less just try something new at this point with how the game has been for the team. Just give him something new. And I don't hate the changes. I think I still kind of would like to see Fiala and Dubois back together, but this feels like the next best thing. So I'm cool with it. And I'm excited to see what happens tomorrow night against Detroit.
Yeah, Joe. Yeah. So, I mean, you're looking at the big scapegoat the last couple months or the last couple weeks has been Dubois. We talked about that on our podcast. Is this kind of a line change that you see maybe some getting him another scorer there, a guy that can shoot the puck in Kempe and seeing what maybe that could help with his game?
No question. I mean, listen, we've talked about how he's creating these chances, and he is. I've talked about the slot passes that lead directly to shot attempts. He's the best on the team or among the most on the team. He's doing a lot of different things, shot assists, zone entries, controlling the entries. We've said that he just needs more of a consistent line mate that can maybe turn some of those plays into goal. He had a few great plays to Laferriere the other day that just didn't work, or, that Laferriere didn't finish or whatever. If it doesn't work with Kempe, then, because there's a shooter, right? There's a guy that scored 40 goals in the league. So, I think this is a really good opportunity for Dubois. And listen, for who knows? Because I love what McClellan, how he talked about the changes in the lineup, and he used the word complacency, and they said, well, it's not complacency. But when you are constantly with the same lineup, and even if things aren't going, you're just kind of in almost like robotic, right? Whereas when a coach switches the lineup up on you, well, now you've got to kind of get used to somebody else. You haven't played with him, or you haven't played with him in a while or whatever. So now you got to think of you're talking way more probably on the bench about, hey, when I do this, I'm going to be here. Look for me here. What are your tendencies with this? And yada, yada. There's a lot more. So you're a little bit more engaged, and I think you're a little bit more in tune to each shift maybe than you were before. So I think that's what he was getting at. I really like that. Side note, as a coach, I loved that he has to deal with this at the NHL level. Somebody asked him, and I don't know who it was, about, guys reacting to the changes. And he says, you never know. Some guys pout because they're no longer with their buddy or whatever. I'm like, oh, I deal with it this at a high school level. I had no idea that. Thank Christ. I was like, good. That's refreshing to hear that at the NHL level, this stuff still happens, because I'm happy to think that. But no, I think though that this is, to your point, to your question, Rand, about Dubois. Yes. Like, this is an opportunity for him. No question about it, to have, he's got a little bit of chemistry with Laferriere. I think we've seen that. Like, they've created a lot of chances. It's just hasn't totally finished. So hopefully Kempe will start to finish some of those.
It's kind of like, when you just get tired of driving the same car over and over and over, I mean, you just get a different car, something new, something exciting. Like, when it doesn't matter what kind of car it is, it's just something new. So I think that's like, you hit a nail on the head, Joe. I mean, it's kind of like you get just bored almost. Like, okay, I got to go out with the same pair, and they're not really winning games either, so the excitement isn't there. I mean, hopefully we can still find ways to get those FIFA celebrations between Kempe and Byfield somehow. But I mean, yeah, I think it's just a way to unlock a new spark in this team.
Yep.
Because I think he McClellan used the word jolt, and he wants to jolt some energy. And that makes a ton of sense because it's just go out there. It's just the same mundane thing. And I mean, there's human beings. I mean, it's an 82-game schedule. We're talking, we're not even halfway through the season, which is crazy. It's just, you just get reminded about how long the NHL season really is. So you got to like change things up a bit. And that's kind of why I wanted to see these moves get made a little bit earlier, because you knew this was going to happen eventually. They weren't going to go an entire year playing the same lines. That would have been insane. Probably the first time that had ever happened. So I think it's a good time to do it. They're not necessarily, it's not like they're like struggling terribly. I don't feel like this is like rock bottom or anything. It seems like rock bottom in the season, but no, they're still well in a playoff spot. You got plenty of leeway. So it feels like a good time to try it out.
If anybody can give Pierre-Luc Dubois the juice, it would be the juice. So I think it's going to be nice there. And you know, and I think Laferriere has had a better month. You know, there's still the stank on him from November where he was, god awful in finishing. I believe he finished December. If I'm looking at his shot percentage, I think it was, wow, I had it pulled up here already for this point, 12%. So a lot better than it was in November. So, you know, whether that is an indication of, you know, something going on there or the uptick there, or just kind of balancing to the mean, you know, having a guy like Kempe who's a legit scorer, who Pierre can keep up with on the rush, who is going to be able to find the spots and hopefully bury those pucks in the slot. I also think that tying it back to our last topic with Brent Clark, a lot of these scorers are now going to have another offensive threat to help push that puck down, down the ice. And I think the rush is going to get a little uptick here, and maybe these lines can help, help be generated like we've talked about from the back end. But it also kind of, when you're getting those opportunities, and it's almost like, you know, you're getting the, you know, you play some street basketball, you get a little lob pass ahead and you're one-on-one with a guy, like it kind of opens up your eyes to like offensive creativity. I think that could be something that we can see, maybe that will kind of bleed into other players and how they play the game. And rather than just being ho-hum with the same line mates that they've seen, you're saying that driving a new car, I've been driving the same truck for over 10 years. So I must have the Kopitar Brown of trucks, because they were together for a long time. Amber N coming in here. Appreciate you on the pod. I haven't seen you coming in here, and she comes in hot and spicy with a $20 donation. No questions, just supporting the good old hockey royalty. We'll reappreciate you guys. Thank you, Amber, for the donation. Thank you for listening and being a loyal fan and coming on tonight. So
One thing I'm curious about with these line changes is how McClellan kind of divvies up ice time now, because I mean, it seems like more of a formality with the way that they practice in terms of like the top six normally wears gray jerseys, the bottom six kind of wears white jerseys. So Dubois was wearing a gray jersey, and that was, and him and Deneau kind of switched. Same thing with Laferriere. I mean, obviously with that line playing together. So I'm curious to see how he divvies up, if he ends up giving Dubois a little bit more ice time, especially with your playing Kempe alongside him. I don't know if you want to give Kempe less what he's normally is, like 17 or 18 minutes a night, when Dubois has kind of been hovering around 13, 15 minutes a night. So that's going to be something to watch to see how that is utilized going forward with these changes.
Yep.
I think they probably roll, but you got to assume that you're not going to sit Kempe for that amount of time. And I know,
yeah.
And maybe we could talk about this for a second. Like, I think Kempe is the type of player that needs more ice time just because he's just a straight shooter, where Fiala can catch lightning in a bottle in 10 seconds and create a play down the line. So him on a third line doesn't really scare me as much as the opportunity taken away from Kempe in minutes, because he's now developed into that pure shooter.
Yeah, we saw Fiala do it last year. He was moved down third line last year and excelled. So I'm not worried about that. I think the unique part about that is with Deneau is usually your kind of, he is certainly probably the best defensive, purely defensive center that they have. And I would imagine gets a lot of D zone starts. That's the one thing with the Fiala piece of it that makes it a little different, because that's certainly not what Fiala is known for, is his defensive game. So I don't know how strict McClellan has really approached matching anyways. I think he more or less relies on those guys, especially Kopitar and Deneau, against anybody. But, you know, I sense that maybe you know, they're not going to look to Deneau to be shutting down a you know, Connor McDavid or trying to shut down a Connor McDavid or Jack Eichel if you got Kevin Fiala on his line, because I think if Kevin Fiala's on your line, you want offense. So I don't know, but yeah, I think that'll be interesting to see how, and what it also means is usually Deneau's taking a lot of D zone draws. Now that means Fiala's taking a lot of D zone starts. So I don't know, just, I think it's good to see how it all shakes out. I think Fiala's good enough to make plays from pretty much anywhere. So I'm not too worried about it.
It's kind of where I would like to see LaFerriere switch with Fiala. Like you just mentioned, like it seems like Deneau's always looked at as that more of a shutdown player. And as weird as it to say, I feel more comfortable with LaFerriere playing defense than maybe Fiala of late, which seems weird, even though maybe a good offense is means you have a good defense.
Fiala, Dubois, and Kempe would be definitely an offensive line. It'd be a fun line. Sounds pretty
fun to me.
The thing is, I get the sense, and I find it interesting that through all of these changes, it's pretty much LaFerriere and Dubois have maintained. And I get the sense that maybe McClellan likes what he sees with those two. And I'm going to be honest, so do I. Like, I feel like they're gaining a lot of chemistry together. And like, I think it was the first shift of the game, Dubois found LaFerriere in the high slot. And I think he got a shot off that might have got blocked or just tipped, deflected wide. It's like right off the hop, he found each other. And later in the game, I think LaFerriere found Dubois. Dubois had two slot passes in the game, both to LaFerriere. It's like, I think there is a little something going on there. So I get that part, that maybe they see something with those two that just seems to be clicking a little bit. They're reading off each other really nice right now.
And we talked about pairs, right? I mean, a lot of coaches talk about pairs rather than lines. And maybe the Byfield Kopitar pair is what he likes more than the Kempe. Maybe you like the Fiala Deneau pair because high defense acumen with a high offensive acumen kind of balances out that line instead of just having a one arrow direction. We'll see how it turns out. And you know, I think Lebowski is coming in here and say his team was flying high 3 weeks ago. All of a sudden, his team forgot how to play. No, I mean, the teams go in ebb and flows. I mean, you look at scoring, and you know, teams are hot, and then they play good defense, and then goalies get hot, goalies get cold, and it's just kind of part of the game. And I think a lot of championship runs are about getting, you know, hot at the right time and playing your best hockey come April. But I don't think they forgot how to play. Just sometimes you need to spice some things up. You know, don't eat at the same restaurant every Friday night. Go out and try a new spot.
It's all timing. Like, every team goes through this. Like, look at Edmonton. They started this way. Like, not even this way. They were worse than this. But, like, they started in a rut. They seem to be doing quite well right now. Every team is going to have their stretches where – you know, they're 2-8 in 10 games, right? The Kings have lost 3 straight, you know, whatever it is. Like, every team goes through this. I mean, if it happens in the first month of the season, the house is on fire, coaches are fired, and it's over. But if it happens in December or January, you're talking about some line shuffling and a call-up or two. Like, it's the nature of an 82-game season.
And what's so weird, though, about these three games, it's like, besides maybe the last night's game, the other two games didn't feel like that big of losses. I mean, we're talking about if the Kings win in the shootout against Edmonton, nobody's mentioning slump. There's no slump being mentioned here. Everybody's probably flying on cloud nine because they actually beat Edmonton. So, I mean, and then even the Vegas game, like, Kings had 95 total shot attempts. Yeah. It's like the most since, like, 2017, I believe. It's an insane number. So –
and the Golden Knights set their record as a franchise for most blocked shots, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. So it's like they're playing against good teams, and yeah, it sucks that they're not beating these good teams, but it's not like they're getting blown out. That's the problem. It's like they're losing. So yeah, it sucks that they're not getting the 2 points in the standings. But I mean, you look at some of the goals that have been scored against the Kings. It's like the defense hasn't really disappeared for me at all. I feel like the defense has still been pretty solid. Goaltending has still been pretty solid. So a lot of maybe question marks that we had and maybe, I don't know, concerns that we had coming into the season, they really come to the forefront. We all expected the offense to score, and that's really what's been the kind of struggle, where the struggles have been the last few games. So I could see them. I mean, even after the changes last night, look at some of the Corsi numbers. They were insane. And so, maybe the high danger chances weren't there, but they were still generating a lot of offense. So I'm curious to see how they come out against Detroit. I feel like this will be kind of a statement win for the team. Well, I'm hoping.
Yeah, and I got to say, I've said this on Twitter a couple times. I think I've said it to you guys. I thoroughly enjoy Todd McClellan's post-game interviews and his media availabilities because I really think he genuinely puts a lot of thought into the question and then subsequently his answer. And I think he really touched on something that you just talked about with the defense. Is it's getting noticed more because there's more pucks. They're not scoring as much, you know. So I think that's just the nature of it. I think that's just being amplified by the fact that, you know, they're not some more pucks aren't really going in. So it makes it seem a little bit worse that the defense, but really, I don't think it's been really all that bad. And yeah, the performances haven't been bad. I don't think, except for Toronto. And I think, and again, McClellan, like he talks about score effects. Like Toronto was significantly better than the Kings in the first period. Like they were bigger, faster, and LA had really no answer for them. And he talked about how, you know, that it got better. The second and third was better. The line changes seemed to help. But then he acknowledges and says, part of that may be us. Part of that may be the other team playing to the score, because score effects are a real thing. That's why if you go for folks that go on Natural Stat Trek, 5-on-5 numbers are great. Always good to look at. Click on that drop down and go to 5-on-5 score and venue adjusted, because they can adjust the stats for the score, because it doesn't really matter. I shouldn't say it that way, a little flippant, but in general, it doesn't really matter that how you play 5-on-5 when it's a 2-3-4 goal game. That's, you're going to play differently. How do you play 5-on-5 when it's a one goal game? And those are the numbers that you want to kind of look at, because yeah. So if the Kings dominate the game when they're down by two the entire time, and I know these days 2-goal lead isn't what it used to be. So it's still, you know, it's still a close game, but that matters. And I think it's refreshing that McClellan acknowledges that. So I think that he touched on some of this. And then I think when the pucks were falling at a huge rate earlier in the season, everything was going in. So it was easy to kind of not cover up defensive deficiencies, because I still don't think that as a whole, there's these grand issues. I think, you know, there's some situations that have come up. I hated the goal that off the faceoff that they couldn't get the puck out of the zone. I don't know. There's two situations where Roy and Gavrikov just iced the puck. They were a foot from the red line. They iced the puck, led to an end zone faceoff. That one of them led to that goal. Unacceptable. That's something that can't happen. Like, even if you're trying to make a play where you're trying to dump it in and you have somebody racing to beat the puck, A, I didn't see that. No winger was flying to win the puck. But B, if you do that, usually you do that in your own zone and you're zipping it down the ice. You did it with a foot from the red line, to not just take the extra stride, get the red line if you're going to do that. And it led to an icing, and the one led to the first Toronto goal. So that, again, little thing that just, and then they don't get the puck out off the wall.
I think your recency bias is a huge thing, and especially in sports. And Holden coming in here, their only wins this last month have been against bad teams. And then they had three opportunities to make a statement that they are a legit Stanley Cup contender. They didn't win any of those games. And then they were shut out for the first time all season. So sometimes, you know, I don't know if it was a statement loss, but it's probably been the most statement loss in a while to the Maple Leafs. And statement losses breed change. And whether the change is going to be good or bad, we're going to see going forward. And a good way to see if that change will lead to money is with DraftKings. And our code here at DraftKings is THPN. Bet the action on DraftKings Sportsbook. If you want to bet the money line here with the Kings game tomorrow night against the Red Wings, you're looking at -1.5. There, if you want to pair that with a Brent Clark goal or point to double or triple your money against the odds, please do so. Download the app now. Use code THPN. New customers can get $150 instantly in bonus bets for betting just $5 on hockey. That's code THPN only at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NHL. The crown is yours. So let's get into the rest of the Pacific here. Obviously, we played the onslaught of, what was it, 9 straight games or 7 straight games, something like that. Then you're playing another team in the Stanley Cup race in the Maple Leafs. So the makeup of the division looks quite a bit different. Obviously, the Maple Leafs aren't in our division. I know that, but you're playing some strong teams, and that kind of dictates the present. So let's get into the the division as it stands right now, the Pacific, in just straight points, Vancouver won with 51. Then Knights at 49, we're at 45. Edmonton Oilers making me look foolish at 39, Kraken at 39, Calgary Flames at 37, and then rounding up the barrel are the Ducks and the Sharks. So right now, the Edmonton Oilers are not in the in the wild card at the moment. The two wild card teams come from the Central, I believe, and the Predators and the Coyotes at this moment, but Edmonton only 1 point behind. So what have you guys seen from the Pacific this month? Joe called it, obviously, with the Oilers or the Rage. They're 7-3 in their last 10. Obviously, their offense looks clicking a little bit better than it used to be this season. What are we seeing from the Pacific? Is there any teams that you think are frauds at this point? Is Vancouver a legit, or are they just regular season darlings? Like, how are you kind of, after more tape and seeing these teams, what do you guys think?
I mean, for me, it's got to be Vancouver. I just kind of keep waiting for them to fall off, and they just keep proving me wrong. So, I mean, you got to hand it to Rick Tocchet. I think he's probably the leader in the clubhouse and the Jack Adams Awards at this point, just the way he's been able to turn that whole franchise around this last kind of season or half season or so. And, I mean, for them to be in first place and kind of, I don't want to say running away with it, but just really holding that lead pretty well, hats off to them. I mean, I think the rest of the division's kind of playing out as I kind of expected. I mean, the Oilers' resurgence is not a surprise to me. I mean, once Connor McDavid's going to figure it out, they'll be fine. And that's certainly seems to be the case. I mean, just had 5 points last night, I think. So
there's really hoping that he would be continually annoyed by reporters asking him about centers from other teams, that he would never find his game all season. That's what I was
saying. We got to get Mark Spector a little bit more annoyed then. We got to make sure he's annoying. He tried. It's funny. I don't know if you saw. He tried to ask Tortorella a question about McDavid, and Tortorella was like, dude, ask me something about my team. I don't care to ask. Talk about the other team. So he's just a typical reporter, I think, just likes to annoy people. But I mean, yeah, the Oilers' resurgence, not surprising. I guess the Vegas Golden Knights coming back down to earth a little bit, or maybe faltering a bit. I think that we've been talking about this Kings, quote-unquote, slump that they're in. But, I mean, man, Vegas is kind of slumping a little bit too. And if it weren't for that shootout win over LA, I think they'd be kind of the talk of the Pacific Division right now. So, I don't know. The rest of the Pacific's kind of shaping out where I expected at this point.
They're four. They've 4-6 in their last 10. Mm-hmm. They're right next to the Kings at 4-5-1. So,
the team that isn't getting talked about that Russ did not mention either is the Seattle Kraken are coming. They've won 5 straight games. They're 7-1-2 in their last 10. They're now tied with Edmonton. I know they've played a few more games, but you know this is a team that even if you know their start, like the start for Edmonton, I don't think was going to bury them because I think they're too good. I don't put Seattle in that same category. So the fact that they were off to such a bad start, they could have buried themselves in terms of playoffs. But at the very least, they're playing some much better hockey, which means it's going to make things a little bit tougher throughout the rest of the season. I don't know how often the Kings play the Kraken the rest of the way, but you know that's a team that you know maybe at the start of the season was really struggling. You can kind of get the best of them. Not anymore. That team is playing some really, really good hockey. So be interested to see. I'm just curious because now the trade deadline is 2 months away. Like, what do some of these teams do? Edmonton's obviously going to be – they're in. They have to push their chips in. They have no choice. What does Seattle do? What does Calgary do? Do they more stand pat? Do they – I don't think Seattle's going to sell. You know, again, I don't know what Calgary does. That's obviously an interesting situation, but the division is going to be very difficult for the rest of the way. Vancouver's for real. Like, are they quote unquote this for real? I don't know. I still think the Kings, I kind of like where the Kings sit in the division, and I am a betting man, and I may or may not put a feature on the Kings to grab the division. They were actually favorites going into yesterday. They were the favorite to win the division. Because again, the odds makers, they see how many games in hand that LA has. So they were at like plus 130, which was the favorites to win the division. So I still like where the Kings sit. Vegas, you know, Vegas thing with Vegas is, and they did it a lot last year. Like if you looked at their possession numbers last year, they were middling. They weren't great. They were really good expected goals. They controlled the quality. not totally unlike the Kings game, where they kind of let you have the puck. They don't mind that because they're willing to block some shots. They're willing to give you shots from the outside that are not dangerous. And as long as they don't give up much in the high danger area, and I think that's just kind of how they operate. It's how Cassidy operates. That's why they've talked about how they can kind of play any goalie they want, because that's the system that they have. So I guess it's not surprising that a team like that may run into some kind of rough patches, because you're constantly
if you're taking a stab, the Kraken are plus 10,000 right now to win the Cup.
I don't know if I'm on DraftKings. I wonder what they are to make playoffs though, or to sneak in somewhere. Because yeah, like hey, like they're heating up, and I think it's a team that they're probably not one that's going to look to sell off pieces. Although if they are. We've talked about right shot, Jordan Eberle. I don't know what his future is in Seattle, if he's going to ink there long term, but just throwing it out there as a name to maybe keep in the back of your mind. So, but I would say Vancouver, they're not going anywhere. Vegas, probably similar to the Kings, right? In a little bit of a rut, maybe. Mm-hmm. Not a team that is going to fall off, I don't think. And neither the Kings. I'm not worried about the Kings falling off or anything like that. And Edmonton's coming hot. And again, I just look at the other rest of the division. They're not easy outs. They're not easy games. You know, I think so. That's the biggest thing.
What about the team in the Mullet Arena? They're holding on to a wild card spot, and we keep saying, "Hey, they're going to drop off. They're going to drop off," and they're still there. I mean, barely, but they're still there.
I think the Coyotes will eventually drop off. They're a young team. They're exciting team, but I think they're going to be an annoying team. How about that? I think that's what they'll be. They'll win games probably they shouldn't be winning, but I think they'll probably be like a 9-10 seed eventually. I think the Oilers will pass them comfortably. But yeah, I'm with you, Brandon. I think, or Joe, I think you hit the nail on the head with kind of we have to talk about the Kraken a little bit. I think a little bit has to do with what Holden meant to here and said in the chat in terms of how the court has played for them, which has been lights out lately. And he's put on a fantastic showing in the Winter Classic, too, with that shutout. So I think he's 6-0-2 in his last 8 starts. I mean, they play a really kind of defensive-style game, much similar to the way Vegas and kind of the Kings play. But, I mean, they've been lacking goaltending a little bit lately, and I think they found it in Decord.
It's amazing what a couple of saves will do.
Yeah.
All right, yes or no answer from you boys. The Edmonton and the Kraken are coming along. Do we see 5 teams from the Pacific make the playoffs? Yes or no?
Ooh, I say that was my pick at the beginning of the year.
Mine too.
I picked the Flames, though, as one of those teams. And I don't know why I do. I always pick the Flames.
They're only 2 points back of Edmonton.
I think I'm just trying to make Joe happy because he loves the Flames, but – I don't know. I think it's I think you could see 5 Pacific Division teams. What is the Central? Let me bring up the Central real quick. We got, I don't know, Minnesota maybe. They're kind of floundering a little bit. I don't trust St. Louis, and like I said, Arizona, Nashville. I guess Nashville could probably squeak in there as a wild card team. They have Soros. They have a decent team. A lot of people wanted to write off Nashville at the beginning of the year. I was like, I don't know. They got some players there, so. I don't know, but I think I could see 5 Pacific Division teams make it, at least 4 for sure. So whether Seattle can kind of come up there or Calgary take over.
That wasn't the question there, Russ. You're walking the line. You're walking the fence here.
I say yes. I'm going to stick with the yes. I think Nashville falls. I think Arizona falls. And I think Edmonton's a for sure. And hey, Calgary's only 2 points back of Edmonton and Seattle. If we're talking about them being in, we got to include Calgary. So that's those 3 teams. I think 2 of them sneak in, Edmonton and one of the others.
Connor coming here saying just still believing in the Flames as the best storyline of the season.
If it happens.
You bet against them the other day though, and you won. So
twice. I've bet against the Flames twice lately.
Both times or just once?
No, the first time I bet against the Flames is probably the first time I bet against them in like 3 years. And naturally that's when they won. But then the next time, yes, they won. So, all good.
Okay.
So,
New Year's resolution and Christmas, and Joe betting on against the Flames is something new here. Let's flip it over. Obviously, we had the holidays, and we're getting into the holidays with the Kings here. So, Kings Christmas gifts. You know what? What gifts what gifts don't people like, you know, and you know, new things under the tree, things to unwrap and all those types of things. What has the Kings given us fans that we were able to unwrap this year that has been a delight for you guys as fans? Russ.
For me, it's been the goaltending. I think Rob Blake's gamble, quote unquote, with going all in on hashtag, like Joe likes to say, is hashtag goalies, and just really dumpster dive has really paid off and given the Kings. I mean, because we wouldn't see a player like Vladislav Gavrikov, I think, on this team, or Pierre Dubois, as much as people want to go up against and see about his trade so far or his production. So I think that has totally paid off for Rob Blake so far. That was the – I mean, you looked at every season preview that was written from national media about the LA Kings. It was all about, well, what's going to happen with their goaltending? And Cam Talbot has proven them wrong. I mean, I thought he was a reason that score wasn't probably a little bit more lopsided than what it was in last night's game.
Yep.
And look at David Rittich. He's just come in. I mean, it's only been the Sharks, but he's won two games so far. So he's looking pretty good too. So, I mean, you have to give Rob Blake a little bit of credit there. I think it's been a good Christmas gift to the Kings, for Kings fans at least.
Joe, what did you want to find underneath the tree?
Well, what I wanted to find was 30 goals from Trevor Moore. We are almost there, guys. We are almost there. Hey, how is Trevor Moore not the Christmas gift, or at least mine? I mean, and I'll put it this way, the health of Trevor Moore, knock on wood, because we saw signs of what he can do when healthy. And as Brandon puts the shirt up, go buy the shirt for a late Christmas gift for somebody. Because, and that was the big reason for the bold prediction coming into the season. I think I wrote an article in the summer about a potential breakout for him. Was everything was percolating under the hood. Everything was there. Everything was happening. And then he had the injury last year, so it just took a little steam off. But I'm like, there's a player here, and he's going to pop off. And I just, the health that he's had, it's been great. So for it's easily Trevor Moore for me.
Yeah, I think looking at it and really seeing where I was coming into the season, I think the best gift has been Quentin Byfield. And I was the harshest out of us three on him, saying that a 40-point season wasn't good enough, 50-point season wasn't good enough. I really needed to see him, really put the gas on. To take this team to the next level, you need value from your players. Players playing high minutes, putting up points at a cost. And if they're going to spend $8+ million on Pierre-Luc Dubois, they're going to need to get high-level value from guys not making a lot of money, and one of them being Cam Talbot and this one being Byfield. And so with him being, this last month, over 16% in his shot percentage, he's been dominating Corsi. He's been getting national headlights. He's playing like a number two overall pick. And, you know, as much as I want to say this, not as a knock on Turcotte, you need your top five players to play over 800 games in this league to be a successful pick. And you not only they need to play, they need to dominate, because that can change the course of a team. Look how much Cale Makar and Nathan MacKinnon have changed the course of Colorado, right? And so it just like you look at those types of players and what they can do for an organization. I think a lot of fans, including us, were worried about the center position going into the season. What that looked like when Kopitar retires, if you have to go out and get another person. Now they got Pierre-Luc Dubois. Now they got Quentin Byfield playing dominant on the wing, which he should slot back into center, a couple years down the road. I really think that this season not only has been a Christmas gift for us fans, but it's been a Christmas gift for Quentin Byfield. I mean, injuries galore, doubt galore probably in his mind. Like, I just can't get healthy. I break this. I can't do that. I just want to show that I'm here and I'm ready to play in this league, and now he's having fun. He just did a Christmas thing, or New Year's resolution thing. Like, hey, he thinks that Deneau is going to break his resolution early. He was joking with his buddies. He's having fun playing hockey, and that's so good to see his breakout here. As Holden 92 has been saying, it's been awesome to see his breakout. So that's been my Christmas gift, and I'm glad that the Kings finally have a top prospect that has come through and been excellent at the NHL level. And hopefully we see two with the Clark train about to depart from the station. So that's been my Christmas gift this season.
Yeah, I was going to say, McClellan added a little something to your stockings there with the Clark call up like a week later.
It's like what's that Christmas story where like the kid opens up all the gifts and then his dad's like, oh, what's that behind the piano? Like, oh, there's another gift back there. All right. Save the best for last. Well, with Christmas gifts comes New Year's resolutions, with them being right ahead. I am just got one this season. I'm doing 100 push-ups a day. I'm going to try to do 100 push-ups a day every day for all of 2024. I got another 30 to bust out after this pod. Just, you know, something to exercise every day. And, you know, and then that way I got the true dad bod by the summertime, you know, all shoulders and chest, a little bit of a beer belly, you know, for the pool time. But New Year's resolution for the Kings, you know, whether it's a player, whether it's a situation, a part of the team, where do we want to see improvement going in here? And how does that resolution get, you know, get held to by the time playoffs come in?
Yeah, for me, it's easy. I think it's the power play. I think that's probably been the most disappointing area for the Kings season so far. I mean, especially with how good it was last year. And I know there's been some personal changes. No more Gabe Vilardi, no more Sean Durzi. Victor Arvidsson hasn't been here yet. But I don't know. That shouldn't be an excuse. With the amount of talent that this team has, I feel like they've just been totally flaccid. It's been almost boring to watch. And it's gotten to the point where fans are now calling for to see if they could deny the penalties that they're or the power plays that they're given. So I think that's an easy one for me. I'll say the power play.
Yeah, I was going along those same lines, Russ. So hopefully they find a solution to that. For me, I'm going to go and tie it into the goaltending because I totally agree with Rush. Obviously, I'm all aboard hashtag goalies. Love what Blake has done. I think it's been genius. But with the injury to Copley, we're a little thin there right now. And I think a little bit more stability, maybe bringing in a veteran, somebody that can at least lighten the load a little bit because they only play the Sharks so many times. So I don't know how many more games Dave Riddick is going to get. So at some point, they need a third guy in there. Just to kind of ease a little bit, because you don't want to run Talbot into the ground. I mean, he's had concerns. He's a little bit old. He's concerned with his injury. So for me, it's getting a little bit more security between the pipes and a little bit more of a cushion to make sure Talbot is fully ready to go come you know late March, April.
Yeah, I like the depth there. What you're talking about with the goalies, I think it's going to be necessary. Talbot playing 60 plus games or whatever this season is still scaring me when it comes to a deep playoff run. I think I'm gonna switch here. And as much as my resolution I hope for is a dominant performance from Brant Clark, I think we've hit that nail on the head plenty this podcast. So I'm gonna go in a different direction. And I hope that Pierre-Luc Dubois is the $8.5 million player everybody on this podcast thought he would be. I hope he starts putting the points together. Hope we start seeing dominant Pierre-Luc Dubois. Hope we start seeing Pierre-Luc Dubois having fun out there, like you know we hope we would, and to where he is a game changer. Whether it's his line mates or whatever other excuse most people want to put out there for him, he hasn't been good enough this season, in my opinion. You know, and maybe that could be because of his line mates or whatever. I just think at some point the rubber has to meet the road, and you got to put some points on the board. And that was my criticism of Byfield last year, and it's my criticism of his this year. I mean, he had three points in the month of December. You know, it's just not good enough. And I hope that him being that type of player will get going into this next season and in this next year, and to where come February, come March and April, he is a dominant factor. And he's a guy that we look for every shift to set something off. So that's where my resolution would be, is to start seeing the underlying analytics match up with points on the board.
That's a good one. I mean, especially when you have him playing with players possibly like Kempe now going forward, and you can't really use that excuse of him getting acclimated to the system, because you're almost getting a half a season now that McClellan has kind of, he's mentioned that a couple times at the beginning part of the year. So I'm curious to see how these next few weeks go for Dubois. But it's so weird because I'm always watching Dubois at practice, kind of see how he's vibing with the team, how he's gelling around. It's always really, I mean, he seems like a really well-liked guy in the locker room and among his teammates. And then he's always talking with this coaching staff too. He's always having side conversations with Jim Hiller or Todd McClellan. You can sense that coach in him because that's where his dad was a coach. So you can kind of see that on the ice a bit. But yeah, I think it's about time we start seeing some of that production, because we were, hey, big proponents of the trade. I was, at least. I know Joe was. So a lot of people were asking to see that production. I don't blame them. We just hope it starts to come to the forefront a little bit.
So that's where I'm at here. Put in the chat, guys, put your new year's resolution there and see where you guys would like the Kings to improve. Before we get into the seat at the round table, I just want to throw a little shout out to the World Juniors here. Canada's eliminated, but Team USA continuing on there, going into the semifinals and hopefully the finals. This has been a big proponent in national media this year with the arrival of USA Hockey on a more consistent basis. You look at, I believe, six of the top 20 scorers in the NHL this season are U.S.-born players, which is the most of any country. And you're seeing a lot more top-end draft picks come out of the United States. Is the United States on par or equal to a hockey country as Canada is at the highest level?
Well, let's not forget Canada's missing some pretty significant pieces, one being Connor Bedard would be in this tournament. Shane Wright would be in this tournament. And I think I'm actually still missing others that would be in this tournament. I know the States.
Oh, with Logan Cooley.
Yep. It's the gap is no question of closing. There's no doubt. I mean, the depth of the United States is excellent. I just think if we were to have everybody here, Canada would be favorites and probably rightfully so, but that shouldn't take anything away from what the United States is doing and the progress they've made as an entire organization, you know, and that goes up into the NHL level and, you know, in a hypothetical best on best Olympic type of setup, you know, I think the United States would be, an extremely potent contender for against Canada. So, yeah, I mean, I think that the gap has certainly closed quite a bit.
I just like the amount of maybe teams you don't expect to be successful at these tournaments seems to be growing. Mm-hmm. I mean, Canada's a big rival of the U.S., and I'll be remiss if I don't say I kind of like seeing Canada lose sometimes. Right. I'm sorry for our Canadian fans. But to see Czechia, a country like that, beat Canada, it's always good to see those moments in a tournament like this, because – there's always been conversations about, oh, you don't want to have like countries like Latvia in the tournament just get blown out. I mean, this is how those countries grow their game, grow their sport. And it turns into I'm sure years ago, Czechia was getting blown out in this tournament just as much as Latvia is now. So look what's happening. I mean, you get players and youthful players that love the game of hockey and start playing a little bit more for their country, and you get a little bit more competitive spirit involved in these tournaments. So it's always fun. And I think with where it's being played in Sweden, that always that brings a great environment. If you ever watch some of those Swedish games, I mean, the fans there are just incredible. So I love the World Juniors. I think this year I haven't really been paying attention to it as I had in the past. Maybe the lack of Kings prospects kind of has an impact on that. But it's always a good time, especially when the semifinals and the finals roll around the medal games.
With the ESPN contract, I thought there would have been more games on ESPN Plus. I mean, them only on NHL Network is kind of a bummer.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I had NHL Network. Can they give us an app? Can we have an NHL Network app where it's just so easy to watch games? Like, every other sport has it. Just give me – I'll pay $5 a month to watch NHL Network highlights each night. Just give me something. I hate it.
I will say there's always some players that jump out, and Norway's got a couple of them in offhand. I don't remember their names, but
no, that knees Hagard or Rogard. I know I know the player you're talking about.
There's a couple of them. Yeah, there's a couple of them that really look good. But I'm gonna tell you right now, I watched a little bit of Swiss the other day. This Rodwin Dionisio, apologies if I'm mispronouncing that. Big, like 6'2", 6'3", 200-plus pound defenseman, left-shot D-man, but really skates pretty well, good with the puck, had a really nice goal. I've been really impressed with him, and naturally he's another Anaheim Ducks prospect. Like, just when you think that they just keep churning these out, this is another one. He's a fifth-round pick, so we'll see where he develops. But I thought he had a really good tournament, so that's another one to keep in mind out in California.
I think that you're looking at these teams.
Is Sammy Hellenius' brother at Konstas Hellenius? Is that who that is?
So I don't know if they're – yeah, I was wondering the same thing because I know I don't know if they're brothers. Yeah.
I know he's been playing pretty good for Finland.
I think it's pretty cool because it's like now Latvia is really the only team getting stomped all the time. Like Swiss held their own against, Sweden. Germany beat Sweden for the first time ever. You know, you had these Chechia teams and all this kind of stuff. And it's good for hockey. And I think there was a podcast that Buchagross was on, and he was talking about potential expansion. And the expansion is only made possible in the NHL if more players are coming in to keep the game at a high level. And so, you know, because you don't want to dilute the game too much. And in order not to dilute the game, you need more high-level talent. If more of these countries are investing in hockey programs, like Germany has over the past decade, how the United States has done for the last 25 years, you're going to see a lot more top-end talent, which means the league can have 32-something teams in there and have more markets and more and grow more fans and have more entertaining product. So I think it's nothing but good for the game. Big ups here, though. Corey Pronman released today that 2026 World Juniors are coming to Minnesota. Twin Cities are getting the tournament. So that'll be something to head out to, which would be something to be fun.
Too close to Canada. It's going to be a Canada-dominant crowd.
I wanted it to be Vegas. I thought that would have been cool. I would have made that trip. That would have been fun. Oh, well.
Well, let's get into it. Our last topic here on the night, seat at the round table. So this, if you guys aren't unaware, this is our player of the month here on Hockey Royalty, getting the seat at the round table. And at the end of the year, we'll tally up all their seats, you know, and crown our king of the season there as a podcast. So, Joe, I'll let you start it off with this one. I'll let you take first stab at this one. Who is getting your seat at the round table?
I was going to go Trevor Moore again, just because why not? He just keeps scoring. But no, I'm going to go with a player that led the team in points, actually, this particular month. And he just keeps doing it, just quietly, seemingly quietly, somehow quietly under the radar, or so it seems, that Andrei Kopitar just would if I would have said this, who led the Kings in points in the 14 games? In December, I don't know, would everybody just said, oh, no, it was definitely Andrei Kopitar. I get the sense that wouldn't be the case, but here he is, 15 points in the last 14 games. He doesn't age. It's incredible. And so for me, the my seat at the round table this for the month of December is the Kings captain, Andrei Kopitar.
Nice.
Yeah, nice. You took mine, Joe. I was going to go Kopitar. I know we try to switch things up a little bit, but I mean, it's hard just to not pick Kopi. 15 points in 13 games, plus six. But one thing I wanted to highlight was his faceoffs. 60.5% during the month of December. It was third in the NHL among players with minimum 200 faceoffs taken. So, and he's playing the fewest amount of time on ice in his career, which is another wild stat to think about. I mean, this is what we kind of been hoping to see with Kopitar is, you see those minutes start to come down a little bit, that penalty kill time start to come down a little bit, and maybe we see the offensive production start to tick up, and I think we're starting to see it a little bit more. So hopefully with the offensive struggles of late, I mean, he's still kind of there producing and a higher point per game pace, and the faceoffs are still there too. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe another Selke trophy is going to be on his mantle here at the end of the year.
Nice. I was kind of thinking of going here with Dan and Talbot, but I'm going in a different direction. A guy who was struggling to find the lamp earlier in the year has kind of turned it on in December, logged quite a bit of minutes, total ice time, had a 72% IPP, which means he was on the ice for 72%, or he scored a point in 72% of the times that the points were scored while he was on the ice. A shooting percentage, back up over 10%, four goals, nine total assists for 13 points in 13 games for the month of December. That's the juice man himself. Adrian Kempe is going to get my seat at the round table. I think his scoring touch was a little lacking. He had to do a lot of it more 5-on-5 this last month of this entire year because the power play has been anemic. And so if he's finding a way to do a 5-on-5, hopefully he can, help Pierre-Luc Dubois in this next week. I think they'll probably keep that line together for a week or so and see how it gels. And then maybe you uptick his production. Like I said before, Laferriere is his shooting percentage is a lot higher this month, up over double digits. And so maybe that whole line can start seeing a lot more pucks go in. Maybe with the increase of power play production from Brant Clark being injected in there, maybe you see some more one-timers coming from Adrian Kempe. So he's getting hot at the right time. If he can start to scorch coming into January, I think this team could really take off. But this last month, Adrian Kempe, you are my seat at the round table.
I like it. He was on my short list.
So, well, guys, it has been a great episode coming back here. I thought we might hit two and a half hours, but we were concise. We were straight there. It looks like Russ had to get out of here, or he froze and had to get out of here. But appreciate you guys coming into the chat. As it showed before here, our shirts are still for sale. This is a Trevor Moore shirt, as you can tell with the 12 here and the California logo. $30 size, small through extra large. We got plenty of shirts left. Coming up with new ideas for this next month, so keep it ear to the ground for that. If you want a shirt, contact Hockey Royalty at contact@hockeyroyalty.com. And Venmo is our source of payment. If you guys need to pay in another way, just DM Russell or one of us, and we can try to make some accommodations for you. Definitely appreciate the support. Thank you guys for coming in here tonight and supporting us. We were strong here in the chat. As always, go to hockeyroyalty.com and check out all of our articles. Follow us on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it, at @hockey_royalty, @RandoCommando24, NHL Russell, and JW Paterino. Time to get some points here, Joe. Time to get some points here coming into January. Rubber's going to meet the road, as they say. New Year's resolutions, got to hold into those and see if we can get some sparks on the road to the Stanley Cup. As always on this podcast, go Kings, go.